everyone. It's Maxine Zurif, and welcome to my first episode of the Green Room Podcast. I'll be interviewing a range of professionals to discuss their experience and provide insight on how high school students should start working towards their future.
Something that I like to share with young people who are starting their careers is to reverse engineer the next 10 years of your life. Ask yourself the question, where do I want to be in 10 years? And what are the experiences and the steps I need to take between now and then for me to be able to get to this place?
Joining me today, I have William Lauder, the chairman of Estee Lauder, a world-renowned makeup and skincare company. Let's just start from the beginning. For my first question, which a lot of people asked, kind of, what did you study in college, and was there anything in particular that you focused your studies on?
I studied marketing, international relations, and history.
And did those studies help you decide that you wanted to be a part of the makeup business?
My studies were not really focused on makeup or cosmetics or beauty. They were really focused on broader business principles. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I needed to sort of follow my curiosity, for want of a better word. Yeah. And I thought that that was a better approach to my academic education than a rigorous course. I wasn't pursuing an engineering degree. Now, mind you, I got a business degree, so I had to take 2 semesters of accounting, 2 semesters of economics, 2 semesters of statistics. You know, I had a number of requirements that I had to take. And I'm sure the business school requirements of the day are different now than they were then. So I did have some requirements that I had to take, but then all those things that I didn't, that were not mandatory, you know, were not core requirements, I really followed a two-track philosophy. Number one, pick the teacher, follow the teacher, mm-hmm. find the teachers who were considered the best teachers. And then the second part was make sure that the best teachers are whom I wish to learn from are teaching classes that I enjoy. You know, the classes that I wanted to take. So by doing that, I kind of found myself in sometimes taking classes that may not have been core to my career objectives, but I thought they were very interesting. And undergraduate education is as much about pursuing your curiosity as it is a rigorous academic qualification, for want of a better word.
Mm-hmm. So how did you like technically find those teachers that like led you to the right path?
You know, it was asking friends who had, you know, invariably I found that the people who I was in school with, they'd say, you know, this professor's really good. Like I had an experience my senior year where a friend of mine said, you know, you should really come with me to this professor's office hours. They're just fascinating and fun and interesting. You'll really like it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, am I allowed to go even though I'm not in his class? He goes, yeah, you can come. You'll enjoy it. And I went and I really, really enjoyed his office hours. And when we were done, I asked him, I said, hey, professor, I'm not in your class, but can I come back next week? He goes, yeah, come back whenever you want. And I ended up making it a regular stop of once a week for an hour and a half. I was in his office with a bunch of other students, about 5 or 6 other students. And it was a wonderful, fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of this was the fall semester of my senior year, towards the end of the semester when we were signing up for classes for the next semester, he says to me as I'm getting up to leave, he goes, you know, I want you to take my class. I forget what the number was, like 360-something, sociology 360-something. And I said, professor, I'd love to, except I haven't taken any of the prerequisite classes. He goes, it doesn't matter. Give me your form. And in those days, it wasn't a computer sign up. You filled out a form. You got it stamped by the department secretary, and you submitted it, and you got the class. So I gave him the form. He put the initials down. I put all the information in, and I took the class. It was fascinating. I would never have even found him. I had heard of him as a professor, but I never would have gone to his office hours if my friend hadn't said, come with me, it's interesting. And I never would have taken his class my last semester of my senior year had he not said, you're taking my class. I want you in my class. You know, so that's just an example of, you know, a larger university. I went to the University of Pennsylvania. So larger universities have extraordinary resources that are available to the students. Some of them are behind marked doors, unmarked doors, and they're just waiting for you to walk through the door to take advantage of what the resources are. Others, you know, they're out there, but the best resources, your friends and peers and others who say, you should really do this. And, you know, there's all these course rating guides where at the end of the semester, the students submit their feedback on the class so that the students who follow can say, this is a class that's worth taking or not. And, you know, you follow that and you follow your friends who say, okay, yeah, this professor is really good, or stay away from that professor.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And, you know, I found that to be, and in retrospect, I wish I could have gone back and not taken certain classes that ended up not being as interesting as I would have liked, and taken more classes that I thought would be more interesting subject for me, subject matters for me.
Okay, so now when you like get out of college, kind of what was your like next step per se? Like, did you find a job right away? It had nothing to do with like building the market to this company, or did you just go straight into it?
Oh no! After I graduated, I spent 6 months working for the Department of Treasury for Secretary of Treasury Donald Reagan, who was Secretary of the Treasury for President Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
And I thought that was fascinating, and it was only a 6 month appointment. And then they asked me if I wanted to make it, be appointed for the remainder of the term, which was only another year and a half or something like that. And I decided I didn't want to pursue this career path that I was fascinated by. I couldn't believe the amount of responsibility I was given at such a young age, but that's DC. Yeah. And that's working in government. It's run by the machinery is run by very young people.
Mm-hmm.
Young people who just out of college or a few years out of college. And I thought that was fascinating, but I didn't want to pursue that. And I, having grown up around the branding, marketing, beauty world, I thought maybe I could do something in that world. And so I went to work for Macy's.
Wow.
And I spent 3 years working for Macy's. I started as a trainee in their training program. And then we were called the Suicide Squad, because our first official day on the floor working as managers on the floor in the store was Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So it was truly an indoctrination.
So what exactly was your role at Macy's?
First, after going through the 3 months training program, which is rotational, we work in different departments, you work in different disciplines, you understand what's going on. I became a sales manager on the floor. So I managed a team of about 70 sales associates who served their customers in men's shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took over the Ralph Lauren shop and the Calvin Klein shop. And so I had men's clothing, I had most of that responsibility. I did that for a year, and they promoted me to be an assistant buyer. And I was an assistant buyer, and then I had the opportunity to start a new department for Macy's in the women's fashion. I did that. And then my mentor at Macy's, who has been a mentor for me for my entire career. I've worked with her in one way, shape, or form, literally since the start of my career. She called me up and said, we're opening a store in Dallas, and I want you to go down to look after all of the departments that are under my responsibility in Dallas.
Wow.
So I said yes, and I moved to Dallas, Texas. And I became a merchandising manager. I ran about a little more than half the store. And I did that for a year. It was a fabulous experience working in Dallas. And then I decided after 3 years, I didn't want to stay in Dallas and make my life in Dallas. And so I decided to come back to New York. Mm-hmm. And I came back to New York and I joined Clinique. And I started my career at Clique, and then I went to Prescriptives, and then I started a brand called Origins in 1990, and then in 1994, I bought a brand called Mac, and then in 1995, bought another brand called Bobby Brown. In 1997, bought another brand called Aveda, and we just kept buying brands and building brands, and I progressed, and then at 1998, I took over the leadership of the Clinique brand while overseeing all the acquisitions and Origins. And then from there, I became chief operating officer of the company in 2001, and I became CEO in 2005. I did that for 5 years, and then 2004. I became CEO in 2004 to 2009. And then I've been chairman ever since, working with my CEO. So I've been in corporate leadership and management for 20 years, practically.
Yeah.
And I was in brand management for the first almost 17 years of my career.
Wow. So how do you, build upon these relationships with the people above you at the time when you were younger to just get you to the place you are today?
Well, when you're young, you have to be a sponge, you have to be curious, and you have to pursue your curiosity. Something that I like to share with young people who are starting their careers is to reverse engineer the next 10 years of your life. In other words, ask yourself the question, where do I want to be in 10 years? What do I want to be doing in 10 years' time?
Yeah.
And what are the experiences and the steps I need to take between now and then for me to be able to get to this place?
Hmm.
In other words, what do you have to do to gain the experience? And I said to myself, okay, I want to be in leadership. I want to be in management. What are those experiences I have to put myself through so I can say, I've been there, I've done that, I know I have experience in this area, and it can make a difference.
Yeah.
So if you reverse engineer and you say, okay, I got to, and one part of my reverse engineering was I knew that the bubble of New York, Philadelphia, Los Angeles was not necessarily reflective of the United States as a whole. So I was very eager to take the opportunity to move to Dallas, in a different city, and get a different experience. When I was the summer between my sophomore and junior year in college, I was traveling in Europe with a friend. We got to France and I had studied French in high school. Got to France and I said, you know what? I'm staying here. I want to go study here. I don't want to go back and study in Philadelphia for the semester. So I stayed and studied at a university in France for a year. And I lived with a family and got my French to a whole new level. So, I just use that example. There are people who kind of let stuff happen, who still do well. But there are others who take a somewhat more purposeful approach. And that's okay, too. I believe in taking the more purposeful approach because I really think that you prepare yourself for what you want to do, as opposed to letting stuff happen, which means you may or may not be prepared for the opportunities that present themselves to you. When you're young, to a certain extent, life is like a football, and you don't really know which way it's going to bounce when you hit the ground. You just have to be prepared to fall on the ball. What do I mean by that? If you've already imagined where you want to be and what you want to do, and you've done some of the work of, reverse engineering and gaining some experience, you're more prepared. You may say, hey, for example, for me, I would say, if you want to be a lawyer, don't go to law school right away. Take a year, go work as a paralegal in a law firm.
Mm-hmm.
You're either going to come away or work in a judge's office or something. You're either going to come away from that experience being more motivated than ever to learn the law, or you're going to say, you know what? I don't want any part of this. And you can use that example after example. This is what internships are for before you graduate. When you're young, first, you got to plan on working hard. And second, you shouldn't expect that the first choice you make out of school is your last choice. Mm-hmm. And that you may have made a choice that you're not happy with and you might make another, or you build on that experience because you meet people along the way. So, for example, a lot of my students, I teach a class for second year MBAs at Wharton. And I found over the last 8, 9 years, I've been doing this class now for 8 years, or 9 years, excuse me. A lot of my students like to go to the consulting firms. Why do they like going to the consulting firms? Well, number one, they get to experience a number of different industries along the way because they're working for different industries and companies. Secondly, the consulting firms pay very well, so they're going to help them pay down their student debt, which is also important. And thirdly, they haven't really decided what they want to do yet. So by being able to work across different industries, you may find an industry you like, or you may find a company where you feel like you belong. And for most consulting firms, they're totally happy if you get hired by the client because it's an endorsement of the people who they've brought in.
A lot of people are very curious, you know, what is the most difficult part about this industry? And building off of that, like, how do you make it different from so many competitors?
Well, you know, we're in an industry with very few barriers to entry, very, very low barriers to entry, still fairly substantial barriers to scale. So one of the most difficult parts of this industry and the most competitive part of this industry is the fact that there are constantly new brands being created all the time. And so there's always new ideas, there's always new things coming along. But when their goal is to knock us off, you know, to not be for them to catch us to be number one. When our company was founded by my grandmother in 1946, her ambition was to beat Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein. And she did. Maybe not in her lifetime. Yeah, in her lifetimes, but, or after for sure. And now the Estee Lauder brand is the largest brand in beauty in the world. But we're in a consumer business. And the beauty business is a consumer business like other consumer businesses. And in consumer businesses, you are running up the down escalator. You can't, if you stop for a moment, you're going to go backwards.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things where you have to be prepared to just working all the time because somebody's coming up with a new idea, someone wants to kill you, and you've got to just stay ahead.
What is like your company's steps into like staying ahead? I mean, I know you discussed that you just got to be on top of it, but is like there a specific
strategy?
Well,
you have to always look at new opportunities, new challenges, new ideas. This is both investing in emerging markets in other parts of the world who have the aspiration to and disposable income to buy brands such as yours. You've got to imagine where the competition is. And, you know, one of the expressions I use is, you know, in the shower in the morning, I'm thinking about what is my competitor going to do to me and what can I do to my competitor before they can do that to me? Mm-hmm. What are those liabilities? And those are the kinds of things that we really have to think about because, like I said, somebody can create the next Estee Lauder tomorrow. And so my goal is to identify what that next Estee Lauder is and make it a part of our company as opposed to somebody else's.
What advice do you have for high school students who are trying to start their own business or get involved in someone else's, say like an internship or just kind of getting like their voice heard, even though they're so young?
Well, it's in high school, you're learning a lot, right? But honestly, learning never stops. Mm-hmm. Once you stop learning, you stop getting better at what you do, you're bound to not get ahead. So if you think, okay, what are those experiences I want to learn? Where can I learn? What's a good experience? Doing a startup, you're going to learn a lot. If you have some good people helping you to advise you to make it work, you learn a lot and you figure out how you can make it happen. Do what you need to do well, what you like. Working in an internship in a larger company or for somebody else is very important. If you imagine, I used the example of the law before, we can go through almost any industry. And if you're interested in the industry, you want to be a part of it, you want to be a doctor, okay, fine. Go do some research in a laboratory. Go work for, do some work in a hospital to see what life is like in a hospital and see whether that's something you really want to do.
Yeah.
You can't think at the age of 16 somehow you have your life planned out ahead of you. Mm-hmm. You have aspirations and you have dreams and you have capabilities which you wish to want to take advantage of. But don't assume that what you thought you wanted to do when you were 16 is what you do. You might. You know, many athletes end up that way because if they don't start learning their sport when they're very young, they're not going to get to the very highest level. But not everybody finds their true avocation and devotion and where they're really good at it till they're older. Not because, well, you can't find it till you're 27 years old. It takes time to figure out what it is that you're good at and what you're capable of.
Yeah.
And what really motivates you.
Hmm. So, like a question on that, what do you say, or what would you say to those kids who think they have it like all figured out at the age of 16?
Well, if you think you got it figured out in 16, pursue it. In other words, you want to start a business? Start your business. Go make it, start it. See how far you can get. Even if the business fails, you're going to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. I would say make sure you graduate from high school and probably make sure you graduate from college.
Yeah.
Does it mean you have to graduate from college in 4 years? No. Does it mean you should? Yeah, I think over time it's a good thing, especially when you consider, well, especially for your peers who are going to Harvard, Westlake, you're not going to have a lot of friends who, when you in your life going forward, who didn't go to college, unless they pursued a career that didn't require a college degree for their success.
Okay.
And I know from a handful of friends who never went or didn't graduate, they're oftentimes very insecure around people who did because they don't have that experience. I would say to you, your mind is the second most important muscle in your body after your heart. Mm-hmm. And you must keep your mind in good shape just like you keep your body in shape.
Yeah.
So just as everyone advocates that you get 45 minutes of some form of exercise at least 5 to 6 days a week to keep your body healthy, you've got to keep your mind exercised at least 45 minutes to an hour or day or more of some sort of learning or knowledge or something. Because if you're not learning, if you're not getting better, you are falling behind.
Yeah.
Even when you get to my age, you're still, if you're not finding ways to learn something new, figure something out, if you're not curious, you will fall behind.
What would you say is your biggest tip in starting a business in general?
You gotta be passionate about what it is you're creating. You have to be really passionate because it's going to be hard work. You're going to bump your head. You're going to run into a lot of obstacles. You're going to have late night moments when you're just going to wonder, I mean, is this ever going to happen? You have to have the perseverance, the stick-to-itiveness to get through those times. But you also need to be able to find people who can be mentors, advisors to you to help you get through it so you don't just repeat the same mistakes that others have made before you. Mm-hmm. Mark Twain is... I love to quote Mark Twain in a number of different areas, but Mark Twain had a quote where it goes by, he said, you know, I left for college when I was 18 years old, and when I came back at 21, I was astounded at how much my parents had learned. And he says that to be somewhat sarcastic, which meant I matured enough to realize that my parents were smarter than I gave them credit for before I went to school. So I use that as an example to say, don't think you know everything at 16 because you watch a lot of YouTube and you're connected on Facebook and you know. Mm-hmm. Do the work. Ask people with the experience, is this the way to do it? Or this is what we're thinking of doing. What do you think? Have you been through something similar?
Yeah.
Find people who can be advisors and help you to learn and be curious. Don't stop learning. Never stop learning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lauder, for joining me today. I definitely learned a lot, and I think whoever listens to this will learn a lot as well. So thank you. so much for taking
the
time.
Well, thank you for asking me to speak with you. Hope it goes well. Bye.
I would like to give another big thanks to William Lauder for joining me today. I think we all learn to explore the possibilities of our future through college and stay determined when you have an idea. This concludes my first episode of the Green Room Podcast. Please check in soon for more.